I'm Evan Lucas, Head of Strategy at InvestSmart, and joining me today is Gavin Wanganeen, AFL legend, acclaimed contemporary Indigenous artist, and also a very, very strong Indigenous activist. Gavin, welcome to the Money Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
It's a little bit different for us to have someone like you on the program, because normally we have somebody that's really, really strict in the finance world and talks their heads off about it. But while I really wanted to get you on here, so I want to talk to you going back through your career, but more from the finance side and from the personal side, because how old were you when you were drafted?
Back in my day, 16.
So you were 16 years old?
In the 89 draft.
Yeah. Yep. And you were in the top 10, weren't you?
Just outside 12.
Yeah. So under then, the rules then were basically that obviously you got a pretty significant salary for a 16-year-old coming out of country South Australia, walking into Melbourne and walking into Essendon. Can you take me through how Essendon looked after you initially, what they did around particularly your personal well-being and personal sort of finance side as a 16, 17-year-old hitting from country sport into professional AFL football?
Yeah, well, it all happened quite fast for me as a 16-year-old getting drafted and, rocked up to Melbourne in, what was it, November.
Yep.
And just experiencing the big Melbourne lifestyle as a young fella was, a little bit daunting, but the main thing for me was I just want to play AFL footy. I'll go to the moon and play AFL footy. I don't really care. Homesickness hit a little bit, but in terms of the club and the way they made me feel welcome and helped me settle in, it was just really important that they put me into a family. I stayed with a family out at Templestowe.
Yep.
There was another young lad there who was my age. Stayed there for the first 12 months and just the support they gave me. There's always a call a couple of times a week from the club asking, you're settling in okay, how can we help you? Do you want to get some part-time work to break up the training, work-life balance type? Thing, and so the support was really good from this, and even back then.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask you. Back then, we're talking about 89, 90.
Yeah.
The support was still there.
I think the support was there, but I think it's at a different level now because they understand the importance of, planning for these guys and their life after football.
Yeah.
Because the footy career could end at any given moment with an injury, and they need to transition out to the real world at some stage. You can't ignore it. So I think the education is even better again today.
So on that, because I'll actually jump ahead then, because that you sort of took me to it, is having spoken to players that have come through in the 2000s and the 2010s, a lot of clubs now really sit them down and set them up with regards to, this is your football career, yes, but this is your afterlife, but also the amount of money that you are currently earning is going to be a level of money that you may not ever earn again.
Yeah, so true.
And how they deal with all of a sudden being a young kid, because you are a young kid, let's be honest, you're not even technically allowed to vote when you got drafted. How they handle that amount of money that comes at you with professional sport, how you actually also continue to set up. Can you talk about the difference between the 90s and what's happening now with setting that player up, and then obviously what you did at Port Adelaide as well?
Yeah, I could probably only best describe it from my own personal level, where, and you mentioned it, I was earning pretty good money for back then, the 300 grand a year, 400 grand a year in my best years. And little did I know back then, and I should have known back then, that I was never going to earn these dollars ever again. Well, not never.
Yeah.
You can, and you possibly should work towards that, because that's a big drop.
Yep.
Once you end your footy career, and I've never been able to match those numbers again. So for me, I probably needed a lot more support and someone needed to sort of grab me by the scruff of the neck and say, Gav, seriously, trust me on this. The money you're earning here, put aside a certain amount to invest in a residential property in an area that's reasonably close to the city that's going to have appreciation over time.
Yep.
I didn't do any of that, and I wish I could turn back time, because if that was the case, I'd buy one property per year of my AFL
salary.
Career.
Yeah.
So one property. I have enough to put down a decent deposit and buy a house and get it rented out. I would have had 16 homes. I paid 16 careers. So I wish I knew that back then, because I'd be set up for life. And now I'm not set up for life, because the transition, out of footy into the real world, unfortunately I've gone through a divorce, so that hurt me financially, and that's fine, that's the way it goes. But I'm still young enough to you know, I've still got another 20 years of work ahead of me. That's why I'm getting involved in businesses, to try and, you know, earn income so I can provide for my family. I have six kids, I have four young children.
Yep.
But going back to the money side of things, when I was playing footy, I missed out on that real support that I think the players are getting now, because I think they're at a much better level on how they educate the players.
So on that, because obviously you went across to Port in their inaugural year in 1997, you were captain. Obviously you are now gone from having been the mentee to the mentor in terms of that space. Were you seeing Port Adelaide start to push to everything you've just talked about helping the finance set up, helping the personal side, the career development afterwards? Did you start to see that towards the back end of your career, or did you think that as captain that you started to have to do that double side, not just on the field, but off field as well?
Well, for me, you know, as a 23-year-old, being the captain of, you know, a young new AFL side was still a new thing for me, and I led by example by playing hard, you know, hard football, doing my thing on the footy field, and the other stuff was, for me, was about just having good one-on-one relationships with the players and encouraging them to play good, hard, tough footy, set high standards so you can perform well on the weekends, training standards and so on, and not accepting, you know, failure. So that was my approach to being the captain. But in terms of off-field stuff, even back then, I feel that it was still a semi-professional, almost professional game, and the clubs were still learning themselves that, you know, the support probably wasn't there like it is today. So even in the, you know, late 90s and early 2000s.
That's really that's fascinating to say. As I said, having spoken to other players, I know now that particularly those high draftees like yourself are now basically put on almost like a payment plan. They're almost on an allowance, a salary to look after them in terms of how they are. So with that, and going further forward, and looking through your career, you had obviously an amazing burst at Essendon where you won the Brownlow, and then the year after you won the flag. Can you talk through the sort of what was going on in the footy club at that time and personally? Because clearly that was been an incredible period. You would have been, what, about 20, 21 and 22 when all that happened? How did you deal with all that?
Yeah, look, my Essendon years were just some of the best years of my life, and the memories that will be with me forever, because I rock up to the great Essendon Footy Club at the age of 17. I become a part of the red and black family, you know, in terms of the players' reach and then the fans' reach. Having success early, the Essendon fans just loved me, and yep. I still feel the love today.
Well, Alan sends the love. He's a massive Essendon supporter.
G'day, mate. Sorry you're not here. And so to have the success I had at the great Essendon Footy Club, to win the Brownlow, to be a premiership player, part of the Baby Bombers, and etch, you know, a little bit of history for myself over the 6 years and in the 127 games that I played, are truly wonderful memories, just wonderful, wonderful memories. And some of the best footy I ever played was, you know, at the footy club, Essendon Footy Club, at the MCG, you know, jumping back into packs, bouncing off packs, getting up, and, you know, I love playing at the MCG. And, you know, every time I go to Melbourne these days, if I'm on a tram, because I love the public transport in Melbourne, I don't like driving,
yep.
Whether it's on a tram or a train, it's crazy. An old Essendon supporter comes up to me and says, "Gav, you were my favourite player at the Bombers back in the day, blah, blah, blah." And that happens nearly every time I'm in Melbourne. And that just reminds me of the, I guess, you know, the impact that I've had on Essendon supporters over the years, and the impact the footy club has had on me in return.
Yep.
So very special memories for me at that footy club.
Moving forward and looking to your Port Adelaide days, and then also, if you don't mind, I'm going to get a little bit harder here and start asking you about the back end of your career and then moving out of your career.
Yep.
Sort of 2000, 2001, had a little bit of knee injuries and also general injuries.
Yep.
What point did you start to realise that footy was coming to an end and the life after football was coming?
Yeah. So the early 2000s, I think it was only 2001 I played a full season at Port Adelaide, and then it was only 2003. I had only two full seasons, and the other eight were injury riddled, you know. I'd have a really strong half of, you know, to a year, like awesome start, a dream start to a season, but then I'd get a calf or a a broken thumb, had to have pins and screws to repair that, and then there was a stress fracture in my foot another year, there was ribs and you name it, there were injuries. And then lucky enough in 2003, you know, I gave up the captaincy after 4 years, and I just focused on getting my body right and came out to win that premiership in, you know, 2004, had one of my best seasons in 2003 the year prior, and it helped the club win a premiership by, you know, kicking some nice goals, and that GF was really special. But then you really start to think about, okay, the end is coming because I'm not recovering as well as I can. Then you start thinking about life after football, and that's a scary feeling.
Yeah, and so on that, when, you know, back, Chocker Williams was still your coach at the time, I assume, and he would have been having your debriefs and the end of season discussions. And I'm sure he was pointing out that obviously, Gav, what is another year? Yeah, we'll give you a 1 year contract. But clearly, when you get that discussion, you know that things are happening. Talk about 2006 and 7, and then obviously into 2008 when your career obviously was finished. What did you do? What were you thinking about at the time? How did you sort of mentally not only prepare for it, but then also looking at, as you said at the start of this discussion, the finance change that was coming that you knew was there?
Yeah, so you know, 2006 was my last year, and I was hoping just to finish that out, but I got a knee injury and that ended it. But it just happened so fast. It's really hard to describe, you know, the process. It's almost like you're floating in between time, and it's just going so fast, and you're sort of just rolling with the punches, not really knowing what to do, where to go. The opportunities are out there. You've got people knocking on your door saying you're interested in doing this and doing that. You just feel really lost. I felt really lost, to be honest with you. I felt like I needed a couple of years just to thaw out from an AFL footy career and just to soak in a bit of freedom. But then once that, you know, 18 months, 2 years hit, I was trying to find work. So I did a little bit of work with the state government in encouraging the youth of South Australia to make really good choice. So it was a youth program. So I did that for 2 years with the state government, which was really good for me, by the way. And then it was only a 2 year contract, and I didn't want to keep, you know, going out to school full time, encouraging kids to make most of their education, their health, their sport, the sports and their mind by being involved in, you know, sports and finish off your education. Then I just got really lost, to be honest with you, and probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years in the wilderness, to be honest with you. And it's only in recent times that I've started to focus on an art career that sort of came about, where my wife Pippa found an old finished painting that wasn't finished, and she said, "Oh, who did this?" And I said, "Oh, I did that back many years ago, but I didn't finish it." She said, "That looks pretty good, Gavin. Can you finish it off?" So I finished it off, and all of a sudden, I started painting and getting belief in the paintings that I was doing, and it helped me connect back to, you know, my culture, learn more about my mum's side of the family. She's a part of the Stolen Generation, and you know, her community, which I remember going to visit. Sadly enough, only for funerals, you know, over the years, but my art has turned, lucky enough for me, it's turned into, you know, a professional art career. And without my art career, I seriously would not know where I would be, because it's given me a purpose and it's given me something to do, something to focus on.
So let's talk about that, because I think this is the fascinating thing, is that is an amazing story. And I think what also, you know, our listeners know is that everybody goes through something like that. Obviously, yours is a big difference because you've had an incredible career in sport and now a career that's moving into something else with your art and how you now know that it's your thing, like it's like your football, it's your thing. Talk about how now only that it's your, not just your passion, it's now your work. Can you talk about how that's actually changed you? Because I know personally having a similar scenario, but this I really want to foot into is that your passion now is what's driving you forward. It's also driving your finances for it too.
Yeah, that's right. I think finding the passion, but also the self-belief. I mean, I think most people at some point in their life will have to transition out of something that they've been doing and all of a sudden have to be forced out of it and find something new. That's scary. That's a place that, you know, you don't want to, you know, be in, because you don't know what's at the end of the tunnel. But lucky enough for me, but the thing is, I initially didn't believe in my art. The first probably 12 to 18 months, I'm looking at these paintings and thinking, are people really going to buy these? Am I any good? Does it really look good? Or is it just because my name, I'm a, you know, high-profile sports person that they're buying them? And then all of a sudden, all the inquiries start coming through, and repeat business kept coming through, because they actually started I realised they actually liked the work. It didn't matter about who was painting it. They liked the work. Well, it does matter as well, but it has to be the work first.
Yeah.
And that's a bonus that, okay.
Your brand is helping that for
I'm painting it. So it's a good, partnership there. And once I realised, I found the belief. I had to find the belief. That's the most important thing. If you don't believe in something, you shouldn't do it. And sometimes it might take a bit of while, a bit of time to find the belief. And that's a hard process. And thank goodness after about 18 months, I found it, because seriously, I was doubting a lot. I was a doubting Thomas. My wife was telling me, no, it's actually really good. But what helped me believe was the fact that people were paying money for these paintings. And they're not cheap, by the way. So,
and on that, I'm just going to say that if you do want to have a look at Cameron's website, it is online. You can see it also on this podcast at the bottom. So please check out Cameron's website if you do want to go and have a look at his art.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for that plug. And then you realise, people are willing to sacrifice, some decent money to put in one of my paintings on their wall. I found the belief, and then I just started going with it. And sometimes you just need a little opportunity or finding that belief. And I really enjoy what I'm doing with that. I feel blessed and lucky that I found it. Thank goodness my wife encouraged me to keep painting, because the paintings do take a long time. But it's, in a way, it saved me, because it is hard for ex-footballers who've had long, successful careers to transition out into the real world to find themselves again. In a way, there's always going to be a hole in this there, because you can't play at the MCG in front of 80, 90,000 people anymore and get that adrenaline rush that you got on weekends, and then to have a drink or a laugh with the players in the change room after a win or even a loss, and that camaraderie, that there's always will be a hole there.
Would you walk back into a football club? If they gave you the opportunity to be a mentor or to be a coach or something, would you walk back in?
Oh, well, yeah. Probably not coaching, because it's, yeah. But in terms of, some form of mentorship and that, because, I love passing on, past learnings from myself to younger guys. So always happy to help out in that way, for sure. Yeah, mentorship, supporting the young kids coming through. That's definitely up my alley.
The passion is clearly now.
Oh, I love footy.
It's
a common. I mean, I love watching the footy. I love both the clubs I played for. And I'm a big footy fan. I love playing it. And I love walking into the footy club, because it reminds me of the career that I had and the wonderful memories. And I love the fans. I love the supporters. The game's nothing without the supporters and the fans. And I love giving back to the fans and giving them a bit of my time, because, and I always have and I always will, because without the fans, the game is nothing.
That's actually an interesting point, because we were discussing off air before we started on the situation going on in Victoria, and we obviously know about New South Wales as well. As an ex-player, how do you think the players are coping with the COVID situation, but also, how football is trying to evolve with next to no crowds? Do you feel that it's not the same, or that there is just something missing, that you can feel the soul of footy at the moment is under a bit of pressure because there isn't that crowd?
I think it's under a little bit of pressure, but I always think that footy will always pull through. And I think it's been really important that the players were able to keep playing, especially throughout last year, and that we got a grand final, and the people at home have an opportunity to see what's going on in the footy world, to watch the games on the weekend. It is a bit of a release to take their mind off, what's going on in the real world. So I think footy's been really important, and even for the players, for them to be able to keep playing is so important, even though we don't have the crowds. But I think it's just been marvellous how we've been able to get the season going and get into the finals where we're at right now.
Gavin, thank you so much for this very special Money Cafe. I know it's different to what you guys normally listen to, but thank you so much for coming along, for really telling what is an incredible story. And I really wish you all the best with your art. And as I said, it's online. Guys, thank you for listening to today's episode of The Money Cafe. Next week, Robert Kopp-Leibson is back, financial commentator for us at the Eureka Report. He's joined by Renato Malta, who's the CEO of IWF Group. And he's going to have a huge discussion about financial advice and where it's going into the forward. If you can send your questions in to themoneycafe@eurekareport.com.au. That's all from me. Talk to you soon. And again, Gavin, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Cheers.